Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go! It's Wednesday. It's Gramlich and McLean. It's time for another awesome guest. Y'all are going to love this interview. Kelly, the funniest man on TV, Coach Mark Richt, is joining us for the show today.
Mac, this man has done it all. For starters, he played quarterback at the U, University of Miami, and was part of the most legendary position rooms ever. Jim Kelly, Hall of Famer. Vinny Testaverde, Heisman winner. Bernie Kosar, first-round pick. We talk a lot about this, by the way. After his playing career, Coach eventually became the offensive coordinator for Florida State during their dominant run in the 90s. His top-ranked offense has produced two Heisman Trophy winners and helped Florida State win two natties in 93 and 99.
And Kelly, it's crazy to think that that is just the start of it. After his time at FSU, Coach Rick was hired to be Georgia's head coach. He was there from 2001 to 15. He compiled two conference championships, nine bowl wins, 145 overall wins, which casually is just good enough for second all time in UGA history. Coach would go on to finish his career with his alma mater. How cool is that? Serving as Miami's head coach from 16 to 18.
And of course, you all know Coach Richt, as he is now working with us on the ACC Network as a college football analyst, which is probably the thing he's most famous for now, Mac.
It's a big deal. Well, Kelly, I think we just broke the record for the longest intro for a guest on this show. Let's get this thing started. All right, guys, we finally got him, the legend, Coach Mark Richt. Coach, thanks for joining us today.
I'm glad to be on the show. It's going to be fun.
Coach, it's so fun because we were just talking how you and I had really never met in person, but now we've met over Zoom because that's what we do these days, right?
Yeah, it is a Zoom world. We were trying to figure out how they made all their money, but everybody in the world is Zooming. So
that's right.
Here we are, and I'm glad to meet you, even though it is virtually. But you seem like a really nice person.
Well, let's hope you think that when we're done. I think
that's
you will.
Right.
No super hard hitting questions. We're going to start actually with your playing days here, Coach, because when you look at the QB room that you were in down there at the U with Jim Kelly, with Vinny Testaverde, with Bernie Kosar, these guys that went on to be Hall of Famers and win Heismans and all these things. What was that like? I mean, did you have any sense of the QB room that you were in when it was happening?
Well, Jim Kelly and I were freshmen together, and we were both fifth year seniors together. He had an injury and I just didn't play my first year. Well, I did play my first year because of an injury, but long story short, we both ended up being fifth-year seniors there together. And, you know, by then I knew I was Jim's backup. I mean, that just was my life. And as a matter of fact, he was living my goals and my dreams and all that. And I finally got over it. My mom hasn't got over it, but I got over it. And then when we're seniors, these two true freshmen show up. And they're both 6'5", you know, about 225 pounds. And one's Vinny Testaverde, as you mentioned. One's Bernie Kosar. Now, we had another guy in between there named Kyle Vanderwin. So there's a photo of everybody, and they're like, who's number 13? Well, that's Kyle Vanderwin. And he's kind of like me, the guy that didn't get drafted in the first round. But anyway, so we're in the first scrimmage of the camp, of fall camp. And at the end of every, towards the end of every scrimmage, you let your freshmen take a series here and there. So Vinny Testaverde takes the first series of the true freshman. And he goes like 6 for 6, just bang, 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 right down the field, touchdown. Gosh. And then Jim and I are taking a knee next to each other, just kind of shaking our head. And then Bernie gets in there, and he hits like 6 for 6, 7 for 7, whatever it was, bang, 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 right down the field.
Wow.
Touchdown. You know, and we're like, oh my gosh, good thing we're leaving because these guys are really good.
Did they, Coach, but, did they do like stars and stuff? Like, did y'all know coming in those guys were going to be the truth?
I'll start with Vinny. Vinny actually went to prep school out of high school. And so he was he went to prep school out of high school. So that's 1 year. And he was actually a fifth year senior when he finished. So he went 5 more years. He was 6 years out of high school when he got drafted, the first pick of the draft. And he won the Heisman and and all that kind of thing. But Bernie was the one that won the job. We finished in 82. Jim and I finished in 82. 83 was the first national championship that Miami won with Coach Snellenberger, and Bernie was the quarterback. Bernie actually won the job. So Bernie is a redshirt freshman, wins the national championship with his unorthodox style and his throwing motion and all that. But he was super smart guy, super accurate, and was on a really good team. And they won the national championship in 1983. Well, he went supplemental draft after three seasons, and the Cleveland Browns picked him as a first-round draft pick, and he was from Cleveland. Vinny, on the other hand, so now Vinny's 4 years into it and 5 years out of high school, his fifth year out of high school, he finally gets to play. They win a bunch of games both years. I don't know if many people remember the game, but his Vinny's senior year, the year he won the Heisman, they played Penn State for what turned out to be the national championship game. And Miami should have rolled them. I mean, they just should have rolled them. But Penn State decided to go three-man rush, drop eight. Miami wouldn't just run the ball to Alonzo Highsmith and hammer the ball like they should have. They wanted to do it in style, threw a few picks, and got beat, got upset badly for the national championship his senior year. But he still went on to be the first pick of the draft, won the Heisman. And the other interesting thing about that room was our quarterback's coach. His name was Earl Morrill, who was like a 20-year NFL vet. He played quarterback for Coach Shula, Don Shula, with the Colts. And when the Colts had Johnny Unitas and Johnny Unitas got hurt, Earl Morrill came in and took him to the Super Bowl III against Joe Namath.
Wow.
Well, Unitas is healthy enough to play in the Super Bowl, but Coach Shula plays Coach Morrill because he's like, Earl, you got us here. It's your job. Well, they get upset by Joe Namath and the Jets. And Coach Morrill literally did not have a very good game.
Oh,
I mean, some people were saying he threw the game and all that stuff.
Golly.
So it was a horrible thing for him. Well, then Shula goes to the Dolphins. And the year the Dolphins had the undefeated season, Bob Greasy got hurt in the beginning of the year. Earl Morrill came in, took him to the Super Bowl. Greasy's healthy enough to play this time around. Coach Shula says, I'm playing Greasy.
Smart man.
Broke my coach's heart, but he thought he was going to get redemption. And as it turned out, you know, that was the only undefeated season in the history of the NFL and still is today. So that was a low. And Earl Morrill, he played at Michigan State, and he was a first-rounder. So Jim was a first-rounder. Benny was a first-rounder. Bernie was a first-rounder. Earl Morrill was a first-rounder. And then me and Kyle Vandewin.
So, that's incredible.
That's amazing.
I mean, just a totally loaded room. I want to go back to continue and stay with these Miami days. You have a lot of nicknames now, Coach. Right. Coach, CMR, Silver Fox, as I like to call you. But Boca Baby has to be number one. Give us a quick little origin story of how this
Boca
happened.
It started out Boca because I was from Boca Raton. So wherever you're from, sometimes they just call you by where you're from. So I was Boca. And then years into it, there was a guy named Mark Rush. He was actually best friends with Kelly. And they were roommates together. And they were a little bit on the wild side, I would say. But Rush,
just a little bit.
Rush was from Fort Lauderdale. All right. So, you know, spring break back in the day at Fort Lauderdale was wild. And the thing about it, if you lived in Fort Lauderdale, there's like 8 weeks straight of spring break. This area of the country was coming this week, and then another one, then another. Well, Rush was in high school, but he looked like he was in college. So he was that guy. All right. He was a guy that looked like Tarzan, and his running backs coach would say played like Jane. But but anyway, he was the funny dude. He was kind of a little bit of Spicoli in him. But he was like, hey, Boca Baby. So I became Boca Baby because of some off-the-field things I'm not going to mention. Mark Rush was the first guy to call me Boca Baby, and then it became pretty widespread after that.
And here it is, still going hard.
It's on the pod.
Boca Baby.
It's made it to the pod. Well, Coach, that's amazing. Okay, let's talk about, because we're calling you Coach, of course, Coach, one of your many nicknames. your three big stints, Florida State, Georgia, Miami, coaching at all three, as we know. Favorite memory from all of them? I know it's tough to pick because you have so many.
I'm glad you gave me a little heads up and I could think about it a little bit.
No. We're just chatting. Just
the shooting from the hip.
Exactly. Well, anyway, Florida State, I got to coach quarterbacks as a GA. And I was saying, we were talking about it on the show. We went 14 years in a row in the top five. We had an unbelievable run. Didn't win as many national championships as you would want. But I would
Quick. How many national titles would Florida State have won during that run if there was a playoff?
That's what I asked him on the huddle,
You know what? It's hard to say, but we probably would have been in the game 14 years in a row.
That's kind of my point. Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully insane. We would have won. If we could have won a third of them, it would have been pretty
special.
But as it turned out, we weren't able to do that. And one of our biggest problems was Miami every year. Miami was, you know, our arch rival. And whoever won that game between Miami and Florida State had a pretty good shot at playing for the national championship back in that day. Mm-hmm. And Florida was in the middle of it, too. And the thing about us is when I was at Florida State, we would play Florida every year and Miami every year. But Florida and Miami wouldn't play each other once the SEC broke into their SEC East and West stuff and they're in their playoffs. So anyway, I think the greatest memory would have to be at Florida State. The year we won the national championship in 99, we played in the Sugar Bowl against Virginia Tech, who was undefeated, and Michael Vick, who was unbelievable. We were actually losing that game going into the fourth quarter. Close game, but we were losing, and then we ended up pulling away. But the year before, we played for the national championship against Tennessee, and we got beat. And I did a poor job as a coordinator of getting the ball to Peter Warrick, a guy who was really just an unbelievable player. And I think he might have touched it. We might have targeted him twice, and he caught one ball.
Wow.
We got beat, and I just did a bad job of making sure he got the ball. And so the next season, you know, and Pete could have gone pro after that year, but he wanted to win a national championship, so he came back the next year, and I think he had two or three. He had three touchdown catches. I think he had a punt return for a touchdown. So we did a lot better job of getting him the ball, and it was you know, we had some great offensive teams back then. Chris Winkie was the quarterback of that particular team, won the Heisman, but the defenses were unbelievable as well. And a lot of games we won, scored a lot of points, but a lot of it was just defense kicking butt, and getting turnovers and blocking kicks and all that. And this particular game, our defense was struggling, you know, just trying to tackle Michael Vick out in space. Two kids got ACLs on defense trying to tackle that guy in that game. And so it was one of those games where the offense really pulled their weight and took care of business. And that was a wire-to-wire. We were wire-to-wire number one that year.
That's
incredible. I think that may be the only team to have done that in the AP era, I think.
Right.
I don't know. But it was a great memory. And I remember getting home. I think you heard this, EMAC. But we get back in town, right? The plane lands the next day. And we're getting ready to ride home. And I said, honey, I'm talking to my wife. I'm like, let's go to the mall. She said, go to the mall. Why do you want to go to the mall? What do you want to buy? I said, I don't want to buy anything. I just want to walk up and down the mall and let everybody say how great we are.
It's Y2K. We're the champs, baby.
That's right.
It's not going to last forever. So, yeah, but that was a great memory. And then I guess what would be next would be Georgia. I always have to go back to year one. First year head coach, just trying to, you know, and I hired some guys. I hired a defensive coordinator no one had ever heard of, but I believed in the guy. And his name was Brian Van Gorder. Ultimately became the Broyles Award winner about 4 years in. But, you know, we had to prove ourselves to each other, to the team, to the fans. And we had a moment. And we had this really rigorous offseason program we called Mat Drills. And everything was about finishing the drill. Every drill had a finish line that if they didn't finish as hard as they started, they had to go do it again. And so it was always finish the drill, man, finish the drill, finish the drill. So we're playing Tennessee, who ended up that season playing for the SEC championship game. If they had won that game, they'd have played for the national championship. So the only regular season loss they had was us that day. And we did it in kind of wild fashion. We had the lead laid, looked like we had them beat. They called three timeouts. We had to punt. They threw a screen for like an 85-yard touchdown. Everybody went nuts. We had 48 seconds to go and down by a touchdown. And so we were actually down by four, needed a touchdown. We go down the field, score a touchdown, and with like 8 seconds to go. And then, so it's pandemonium for us. We're at Tennessee. And we're in the locker room and we're celebrating and everybody settles down. And I was like trying to explain to the team what we had done together and all that kind of thing. And then one of the seniors popped up and said, "We finished the drill, coach."
That's right. Come on.
And I said, "That's right. It's exactly right. We fit all that hard work we put in, paid off just now in that moment because we wouldn't quit." And that's what finishing the drill is all about, not just in football, but in life. Just don't quit. Don't quit on relationships. Don't quit on your team. Don't quit, you know, when things get tough, because things are going to get tough in life. And that's what finishing the drill is about. But it validated us as a legitimate staff in front of our fan base and our players as well.
So I got a little PTSD right there when you mentioned mat drills. I started sweating a little bit.
Mac did freak out.
They're not fun.
Yeah, they're absolutely.
When we go to Miami, I'm sorry, I tend to forget stuff. So
that was an incredible story.
Going to Miami, the Miami game again when we played Notre Dame at home, it had to be the greatest moment. And I was only there three seasons, but we had lost four games that were a touchdown or less. We lost every close game. And then my second year, we won every close game, and there were some close ones. And then so we're getting into the season. Then we played Virginia Tech one night, and we win the game, and all of a sudden people started talking about us because we were undefeated at the time. They finally thought maybe Miami's pretty good. So the next week, game day is coming to Miami because Notre Dame's showing up for a night game. And we had a head coach's dream in regard to our fans showed up at game day. They were unbelievable. It was a beautiful day in Coral Gables late in the year, you know. Palm trees swaying and the weather was perfect. And it was just a four-hour infomercial for Miami football. And then we played the game and we just beat the living tar out of them from the very first snap. And I mean, nothing could have gone better. We had all of our greatest recruits there. I mean, it was a moment that you just hoped things would go well, and every single thing went just perfect. And then we had one more game against Virginia. We had won. We were 10-0. We were 9-0 after that one. 10-0 after Virginia. Then that's when we had the infamous game against Pitt. Pitt's
your
like
boy.
3-7, and Kenny Pickett was a freshman, his first start of his career.
Kenny Pickett's been there 10 years.
He's
seriously,
been there 10 years. I know.
Oh so, my gosh!
And he's coming back.
I'm still mad at the guy for that. He kind of ruined our vibe because I think we were like second or third in the college football playoff.
Right? Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
They're saying if we play Clemson and even lose close, we're in.
You're in. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I remember.
So we lose the Pitt, and that was the end of it.
Well, thanks, Pitt.
We could have beat Clemson and got in, but we weren't beating Clemson that day, that's for sure. I was just happy to get a field goal and keep us from getting shut out.
That's right. Well, Coach, you just mentioned all these great stories, and again, just the dominance that you guys have been a part of. Is there a certain player, and maybe just one, that stands out that was different, whether – you know, on the field success or just, you know, you had a different special relationship with.
Yeah. Charlie Ward was it. Charlie Ward was, he was the most decorated college player ever. Won the Heisman, won the Sullivan Amateur Athlete Award in all sports. Johnny Unitas and Sullivan, whatever those awards were, he got them all. And he was just a quiet guy. He was the greatest leader I've ever coached who really hardly ever said a word. But those teammates respected him so much. And a lot of it had to do with how he lived his life. And he was a man of faith. I mean, you know, I was a man of faith early in my years of just coming to know Christ. And but he was like a mature man in that regard. And he was the kind of guy that when he went from football to basketball season, like the basketball team might have played a few games already before he got there, before football ended. And I remember talking to the director of basketball ops, and he said, "Coach, this is the deal with Charlie. When we were on the bus rides and the plane rides and all these trips, when Charlie went there, our guys were kind of a little bit on the wild side, and their language was not the greatest, and this, that, and the other. And when they're always having to try to calm them down. And he said, the minute Charlie Ward walked on the bus to go to the airport, they just would not do that in front of him because they loved him so much and respected him so much. And he was a special guy. We won Coach Bowden's first national championship in 93 with Charlie. And he was the most special guy I coached as a player and a person.
Yeah, I figured that was coming. Just the stories that we've heard from him, hearing him speak, you guys interviewing him a bunch of different times on the huddle, just seems like a really, really good dude. And that's great to hear even to this day.
Yeah, just a humble guy. And I mean, he's the guy, he wasn't 6 foot. He weighed 192 pounds. When the pros came to pro day, now he had done some NBA basketball combine stuff because he was doing both, you know, thinking about either sport. But he was an amazing person and player. And then he's a first round draft pick at the NBA draft.
Crazy.
He plays about 14 years for the
Knicks. Wild.
Houston and San Antonio, I think, too. But
unbelievable. Okay, speaking of Florida State in the 90s, we know that when Florida State joined the league, 92, I believe,
yes.
I mean, they just dominated when they joined in the 90s. So you saw the ACC then, and of course you finished your career in the new ACC at Miami.
Right.
How have you seen the ACC evolve, specifically from a football perspective, over the last 30 years?
Yeah, I think the overall quality of coaches and commitment to the sport is different. It's better than it was back then. You know, quite frankly, I mean, everybody would always say the ACC was a basketball league. And I think when we showed up, it certainly was, it had that reputation. And that's what they were most concerned about, it seemed like, is if everything is good in Tobacco Row when it comes to basketball, you know, we're happy.
That's right.
And it was kind of I would say it was a gentleman's league in football. Everybody would help each other up when they knocked each other down and, you know, just kind of friendly competition.
And then you bad boys come in and ruin it all.
And, I mean, we
are boat racing people.
I mean, it was different. We just wanted to demolish people and not be, you know, feel bad about it. I mean, we took pride in leading the league in penalties every year, and we felt like people would get calls just out of sympathy and things like that. And then about 6 years in, I don't know how many years in, it might have been four or five, but it seemed like 6 years in, we finally lost one to Virginia on the last play of the game. If there had been instant replay back then, we might have won that one too. But their fans went nuts. And by the way, Virginia fans can really – they're educated. Those kids, they would do their homework and know something personal about those guys or know something personal about me. And they would just be chirping it with the bottle of whatever they let them have in the stands.
They do their homework at UVA.
They do their homework, buddy. They knew how to get you.
That's amazing. I love to hear that. And you know, we've had three quarterbacks in a row on this show now. We started with offensive linemen, then we took a little break, had a little wide receiver, some people might know him, of Hunter Renfrow, and now we're on our third quarterback. So I've asked this question to each one of them. This is a really deep class of quarterbacks, and in my opinion, and I'm sure yours too, Coach, that I'd probably stack up against anybody in the country top to bottom.
You're talking about in our league?
In the ACC, correct.
Yes.
Looking specifically at De'Eriq King and just knowing how special he has been for Miami, what he means to Miami, I guess, what have you seen that you like most about him as a leader and then his game on the field?
Right. Well, I've said this many times and I still believe it. Miami, when even the time I was there, after Brad Kaya left, we didn't really have a quarterback talent issue. In my opinion, we had a quarterback maturity issue. And so Miami needed a mature guy to come in. Anytime you take a risk playing young guys, you just never know if they're ready for the job, the pressure of the job and the responsibility of being the face of the program. And some of those guys just weren't ready to handle that very well. And it showed. But then here comes Derek King, very mature guy, very accomplished player from Houston. But a mature guy in his age, obviously, he was a senior transfer. And he also had been through some tough things. And we know his mother had a cancer issue. His father died of a heart attack, you know, after he had made his decision to go to Miami. So he'd been through a lot, and he understood what it meant to be a man, a true man who knew how to take care of business off the field and on the field. And so the maturity level, you can't, it's hard to measure how truly important that is, but it's so hard to predict sometimes through the recruiting process. As far as a player, we know he's a dynamic runner and is becoming a dynamic passer. He was always a very good passer, but I think he's become even better than that. I think he's going to have a legitimate shot in the NFL. I think that, you know, maybe 10 years ago, a guy like him wouldn't be able to think about it in that way. But I think nowadays you can. You know, the kid out there with the Cardinals.
Kyler Murray.
Yeah, Murray. I mean, to see Murray doing some of the things he's doing, I think Derek King can do those things as well. But Miami hit the jackpot with him, but also similar to Joe Burrow and his coordinator at LSU, Brady, you know, here's Derek King coming in out of nowhere and his coordinator, Rhett Lashley. And Rhett Lashley, without a doubt, we've all said it, you know, you could tell when a guy knows what he's doing. You could tell when he knows how to scheme people and make it more of a downhill battle for your team than always fighting upstream. And he's putting them in a lot of really good situations, running game-wise, throwing-wise. And he seems to have a gift of how to communicate to those quarterbacks and players. So he deserves a lot of credit for Derek King as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And one follow-up real quick before Kelly wraps us up here. Do you think that King should come back? Do you think that he can play one more year with Miami with all the hype, with all the attention? The offense, as we've seen it, getting better and better each and every week. Do you think him coming back for this, you know, super senior season, would that elevate his draft status? Or is he kind of where he is? You know, he's not going to grow taller, obviously. Right. Part of his game that he can improve on. But do you think that'll help him or not?
Well, he's played a lot of football. And he's been highly successful at Houston, as we know, and now at Miami. I think he can certainly improve his draft status. How much, I don't know. Is it incremental or could it be huge? I don't know. But I do think he likes being on a team that he thinks has a chance to win big. I think the moments that he missed at Houston, as far as the national stage, he can have at Miami. And I think he really likes the idea of that. So I would not be shocked to see him come back to play and help Miami be what, you know, everybody says is Miami back. I think he'd love to see Miami truly be back.
No doubt. Absolutely.
And play in the types of games very competitively. I mean, he already played the Clemson game, but it wasn't very competitive. But I think he'd love to be on a team that could, you know, go toe-to-toe with Clemson or whoever, you know, ends up being at the top of the league or in a playoff or whatever it may be. So I would not be shocked to see him come back.
We'll see. Time will tell. That would be
If he's smart, he'll go to Coach Lashley. Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Say, if you come back, I'm coming back.
There you go. A little recruiting.
That's what I would do.
I like that because you never know. As a player, you never really know. Your coach could be gone the next day. You just have no idea. Okay. You're the perfect person to ask this final question, Coach.
Uh-oh.
You've coached at Georgia. Georgia hates Florida. You've coached at Florida State. Florida State hates Florida. Which school?
Hold up now. I coached in Miami.
No, I know. I'm just asking which school.
Okay.
Well, that's even another question we could debate. Florida State's main rival is Miami, yes?
Well, it is today.
Okay, it is today.
Florida is for Georgia, Florida State, and Miami, if Miami were to play Florida, I guess they're not playing them now as often as the point you're making. But all through, like when I was playing ball in Miami,
yeah,
we played them every year. So
right,
the Gators have never. I would never allow my children to drink Gatorade.
Okay, that's a great point.
Yes, sir.
Who hates Florida more? Does Georgia hate Florida more, or does Florida State hate Florida more?
Oh, Georgia does.
Okay, no debate about it.
There was no hesitation with that answer.
No, Georgia does for sure.
So Florida State hates Miami the most.
At this point, definitely, and probably historically too.
Honestly, might be Clemson at this point, but we don't have to get into that today,
Florida
Coach.
State. Well, you're right. But the thing about Florida State is, you know, they were an all-women's school for a long time, and then they started playing football. And Florida, in the beginning, would not play them because they were below, you know, they just were a little bit uppity about that.
Sure, sure.
And so I think the governor finally made those two teams play, and then Florida State finally won, and things changed. It took a long time, but things changed. The biggest thing that happened to Florida State in the Bobby Bowden era was Florida got put on probation where they could not be on TV. Mm. And that particular year was the year Deion Sanders came out and a bunch of great players. They all probably would have gone to Florida, but they're like, if I can't be on TV, primetime's like, if I can't be on TV, I'm not going to Florida. I'm going to Florida State.
What a guy.
And that changed everything for Florida State.
That's so amazing. No Rick'd child or grandchild will ever drink Gatorade.
Well, here's how it was. If we'd won the game, they could drink Gatorade.
Oh, okay. I like that.
That all season. If we lost the game, like at Georgia, we were a Powerade team by design. We were not going to be a Gatorade.
Makes sense.
All right, last one for you, Coach. Yeah. And you can answer it quickly, slowly, however you want to do it.
Sure.
Who was your favorite team to beat? Whatever year, you saw them on the schedule. You're like, man, we're going to crush these guys. I can't wait to do it. Who was that team that there was just a little bit extra in the game plan when you saw
them? Yeah, I don't think it was ever. I went into the game saying, I know we're going to crush them. But the team that you enjoyed crushing the most was probably Georgia Tech. back in that triple option era. He just hated playing that game because our guys hated it on defense. You spend spring ball, you spend fall camp, you spend your open dates practicing triple option
That's
football,
right.
and then you go play for the SEC championship game the next week against a normal team.
Right, spread but, wide open.
But the first time I lost to them, first time we played them with Paul. Rumor got to me that he said, "Well, Coach Rick's a nice guy, but he'll never beat us again." So somebody probably made that up just to make me mad, but it worked.
It worked.
It worked. And here's the worst part of the story, real quick. I go to the ACC, and then we have these coaches meetings at the beach, and you get to hang around all the head coaches of all the teams. I get to know Paul, and I'm like, I like this guy. I hated the fact that I liked him. And I was like, I didn't want to like the guy. But,
you should have kept your distance. You should have stayed away.
I should have. But I really like Paul. He's a funny guy. He's a good guy.
That's awesome. Coach, this was better than I thought. I tried to put high expectations. You blew it out of the water, as always.
It was fun.
We can't thank you enough for joining the show.
All right. You guys have a wonderful day or night or whatever is next.
Coach Richt, what a character. Oh, that was so fun. Story time with Coach.
He's the best. He literally is the GOAT. The stories, I mean, we could have extended this thing out to like a 3-hour podcast, but we had to keep short and sweet. Coach is with his family. He's doing Thanksgiving. He was gracious enough to give us a little bit of his time, but what a great interview that was.
He really was. And we know, he had some other things going on too. So to give us his time was awesome. And guys, this podcast is produced by Richmond Weaver. He makes us sound good. If you only knew the effort it took to make this podcast sound good. So we appreciate him greatly. And he also has a podcast, Rich Take on Sports. So go check that out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods. Mac, it's time for our ACC of the week.
Come on.
Athlete, coach, craziness. Our coach is obviously Coach Rick. Our craziness is obviously all the things he said in that interview. But we also have some other players and coaches to put on this list. I'll start with my A. My athlete is Pitt senior, fifth-year senior wide receiver, DJ Turner.
Come on.
Who may have said he's coming back.
He definitely did.
We'll see if he sticks to that.
Right.
But we knew Jordan Addison was out due to COVID protocol, and DJ Turner stepped up huge for Pitt in that huge win over Virginia Tech. 15 catches, second most in Pitt history in a single game, for 184 yards and a touchdown. He was out of his mind. And I saw, Mac, that the pregame, DJ Turner recently had a son. He brought the son over. He got to meet Kenny Pickett for the first time. And then that kind of spurred on their great game. They really coordinated well together and had great chemistry during that game. So DJ Turner, athlete of the week.
I love that. And I'm going with this quarterback. It makes a lot of sense, right? These two guys just absolutely balled out. My athlete of the week this week, Kenny Pickett, the GOAT, the legend. I hope he comes back. Coach talked about him. Coach still has nightmares about this guy. Kenny Pickett just casually went 35 of 52. Kelly, for starters, I can't imagine throwing a ball 52 times in a game when it matters. My shoulder hurts thinking about it. 404 yards, two rushing touchdowns, had a couple of scrambles here and there. Pittsburgh is a different team with Kenny Pickett, and they're coming to Death Valley this weekend, and I cannot wait to watch this matchup between an elite defense and Kenny Pickett.
They're averaging also pretty good offense, Mac. They're averaging 44 points per game the last two games.
Different team. Totally different team with him playing.
Speaking of Pitt, there's only a few teams that play this weekend, guys. My coach,
Slim Pickens.
My coach of the week is Sneaky Pat.
Sneaky Pat Narduzzi.
He wasn't being very sneaky. He wasn't being very sneaky this week, but somehow Pitt managed to play through all these COVID protocols. So did Virginia Tech. We'll give them credit as well. But as I just alluded to, Pitt has been ridiculous their last two games. They're averaging 44 points per game. They're beating opponents by an average of 28.5 points. The win over FSU, the win over Virginia Tech, two storied programs that, of course, are having rough years, but still, Pitt dominated them. And Mac, all eyes turn towards this Pitt-Clemson matchup this weekend, as you said. Clemson, I think, has done a better job than their fans, perhaps, of turning towards the Pittsburgh game. But Clemson has to be 100% focused for the Panthers coming in.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to dive into that game. So come back Friday. Y'all will hear all of us talking about just really a full dive in.
And Notre Dame UNC. Woo.
Yeah, there's some loaded games this weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. My coach, Dave Doran, NC State, saving the dignity of the ACC, getting a huge victory at home, number 21, Liberty. They were undefeated. And now NC State has two top 25 wins. I mean, really impressive when you look at this team. They're 6-3, that they're just finding ways to win, Kelly. I talk about it seems like every week that this time they win with defense. This game they've won with special teams, the offense, running the ball. So it's been very interesting to see that each week it's a different flavor and the end result is the same. It's a W.
Speaking of Doran, Mac, and we talked a lot about Doran on a Monday's pod. So go check that out, talking about how he may be coach of the year in the ACC.
Yep.
My craziness has to do with NC State's performance this past week, but mainly their defensive performance. You've talked about NC State has dudes. They just can't seem to show up when it counts, and they still allow a lot of yards and points on most Saturdays. That being said, NC State held Liberty to 279 yards of total offense. That's the first time that Liberty has been held under 350 this whole season. It gets crazier, Mac, because this is our craziness. Liberty was averaging 490 yards per game heading into the NC State game.
Insane.
Tons of credit to the pack defensively for getting it done.
Yeah. First time. And again, you mentioned it. I talk about it all the time. When you look at the roster, when you look on the field physically, it's like, dang, that's some good looking dudes. And then you look at the stats or the averages and you're like, how does this happen? So it was great to see them put together a full team. You've got two more games and then hopefully a bowl game. Let's go do it four times in a row and really have some momentum building into the offseason. My craziness, let's go to Virginia. The only other game playing, I had to find something from it. And this is actually a really crazy stat. Brennan Armstrong became the only UVA quarterback to throw three passes over 50 yards in a single game, which it doesn't seem that crazy, but it was a huge deal. And they were throwing the ball all over the field. I thought the run game was going to be what really shined. just looking at what Abilene Christian was giving up, but they threw it all over the yard, and it was impressive to see.
Setting records with UVA. Also, Mac, I know you didn't do this on purpose, but Syracuse and Louisville also played.
Yeah, but you know.
Yikes.
And it was Friday. This is the weekend.
I very much understand how you could forget about that game. It's okay. No one's going to blame you.
No doubt. Well, hey, guys, tomorrow is Thanksgiving. If you're listening to this podcast when it releases, hope you guys have an awesome time. Stay safe. If you get to see some family, enjoy it, cherish it, understand this crazy just world that we're living in this COVID era. Thank you all for listening. It was an awesome episode. Big shout out to Mark Rick joining us again. If you guys haven't already, go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, drop a little rating, a little review. Again, it's always really fun to hear from you guys and do different things on the show. But until next time, we'll see y'all.